As we meet tonight, it has never been more clear that the state of our union depends on the state of the world. And tonight, as throughout our own generation, freedom and peace in the world depend on the state of our union.
We do not have inflation because, as President Carter says, we have lived too well. We have inflation in great measure because the federal government has lived too well.
Reagan is our projected winner. Ronald Wilson Reagan of California, a sports announcer, a film actor, governor of California, is our projected winner. We have projected Ronald Reagan the winner.
I don't know what you guys think about what happened last night, but I think it's pretty frightening. You guys are young. There's going to be a lot of people dependent on you coming up.
An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
John Lennon can't be dead.
Four cops pulled John Lennon out and put him into the back of a police car, and his mouth, he was bleeding from his mouth, and it was a terrible sight.
He was shot late this evening in front of his apartment building in New York City. Apparently, he was killed almost immediately. The man who shot John Lennon walked up to the musician as he was leaving his limousine. According to eyewitnesses, he said, "Mr. Lennon," and then fired at him point blank at least five
John
times.
John Lennon was murdered on his way home, just outside the celebrated Manhattan apartment house, the Dakota, where he lived with his wife, Yoko Ono, and a five-year-old son. John Lennon's body was immediately rushed in a police car here to Roosevelt Hospital, just 13 blocks away from his apartment in Upper Manhattan. He was dead on arrival.
President of the hostage is out.
Can't say yet.
Not yet, Sam. Not yet.
Is that what he said, Frank? I couldn't hear it.
Not yet. Not yet.
They've cheated him. They've cheated him right down to the end.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
America's future rests in 1,000 dreams inside your hearts. It rests in the message of hope in songs of a man so many young Americans admire, New Jersey's own Bruce Springsteen.
The city has people going hungry. There's old folks whose Social Security checks don't get them through the month. There's people who've been hit by unemployment. There's people who the trickle-down theory of economics ain't trickling down to.
The 1980s have been born in turmoil, strife, and change. This is a time of challenge to our interests and our values.
It's called Autumn and Everything After. Subtitle is, The Murder of John Lennon, The Evolution of Bruce Springsteen, and The Birth of the Reagan Era. So there's a lot to digest there. I'm pitching it as a story about rock and roll and murder and politics and the cultural divide and ultimately the ongoing current war on democracy. And that plays right into what's going on, because although the book mostly focuses on the fall of 1980 and the last 3 months of 1980, it's very current and it wraps up in the present, in this pandemic. There's a lot of places I can go as far as lumping together three names, Springsteen, Lennon, and Reagan. That's a mouthful. And, who in their right mind does something like that, let alone puts those three people in the same sentence. But, you know, a lot of it in terms of getting into the three characters, I guess, which I'll get into, I'll just get past the politics part. But a lot of the underlying sentiment that is that, you know, that the fact that we've thrown all of this, all of the expressive thought and music and the arts in general in with stereotypes of identity politics, you know, and that's where we are today. You know, what used to be a common fact of the arts, especially music, is now looked at with complete contempt and disdain. Mm-hmm. And that's the artist's right and or obligation to use his or her platform on any number of concerns related to social issues.
So yeah, social injustices have really, it's not like they've never been there, because they've always been there.
Right.
But now it's just, it's pulled so much to the forefront. Oh, you're a Springsteen fan? You're a fucking whack nut.
That's it. Yeah. Where it was once an American thing, it's now become isolated as a liberal thing.
And we had a discussion about the Dead and how much I was surprised that there's so many Deadheads that are conservatives. I'm like, wow, that's not like, I just didn't expect it to be that way. And hey, okay, people have their own beliefs, but it is what it is. I was just shocked.
It's really where we are, you know?
Find that out. Yeah, we're shocked to find that out.
And in the case of rock music, man, I mean, we can spin it any way we want in 2020, but I mean, rock and roll, like it or not, has always been a liberal cause, period.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the arc of rebellion across all of the decades has always been, well, not so much in the last two decades, but it's always been against the conservative constraints of society, going all the way back to the Blackboard Jungle and Rock Around the Clock. The same way that Madonna shocked in the 90s, Elvis did it way back in the 50s, man. It was the conservative forces that railed against that.
Putting their fist down on the desk, you know, angrily down on the desk. No, we won't stop this rock and roll music.
Springsteen said, you know, the same way that Elvis freed your body in the 50s, Dylan freed the mind in the 60s by making socially conscious music into the cultural zeitgeist, whereas it once just only existed on the fringes of the folk revival. And, you know, in the 70s, it was punk. And in the 80s, it was hardcore. And, you know, they're railing against Reagan the same way that a lot of the counterculture railed against Nixon. So this is not a new thing. The only thing that's new is...
Well, those conservatives tried to go after it, too, with the parental warnings. I mean, they really went hard after it. There was a lot of conservatives that went hard after rock and roll, after music. And I shouldn't just say conservatives. But, you know, I'm thinking Reagan in particular. But then you had Al Gore and his wife Tipper too, who are liberals, and you know, they really went after rock and roll.
And I'm glad you make that point, because I also make that same point in the book, where the PMRC, you know, I mean, we have a liberal senator's wife. You know, that's another thing, is, you know, I wear my politics on my sleeve. I make no apologies for that. But I make very clear at the outset of the book that if anybody that's expecting a Reagan bashing book is going to be extremely disappointed, because to the contrary, I mean, I'm very critical of him, obviously, but I also defend him a lot where he needs to be defended. And there are a lot of areas where he needed to be defended, especially where I argue that, you know, a lot of this stuff where you see Trump and the current GOP try to attach themselves to Reagan's legacy and as the rightful heirs to the Reagan legacy and the Reagan tradition is, I said, well, it's just not the case. And, you know, this is somewhat of a wake-up call. Not that I have any far reach, that I'm going to be any wake-up call to anybody, but, I mean, I'm certainly making that argument.
That's a good point.
They want to call it a liberal thing, you know, that expressive thought is a liberal thing. Well, yeah, there's a reason for it. But we try to make it an American thing.
Yeah.
Liberate is free. Liberate is, you know, when Trump told his army to go liberate Michigan during a stay-at-home order, you know, they showed up with their guns. His intention, you know, however fucking depraved it was to beat his chest with the rhetoric. Everybody else be damned by the consequences of the fallout. But liberate Michigan. The language, you know, like the language
stand
of freedom.
By,
you know, we liberated Kuwait and we liberated Iraq from Saddam, and they like to use the language of freedom and the colors of freedom and the symbols of freedom. But when it comes to actual freedom, we hold it in contempt when it doesn't apply to us or anything we might agree with, you know. So that's why Bruce Springsteen gets crucified for the same thing that Kid Rock gets applauded for.
Yeah.
And we've been living in this climate since we left the 90s. The funny thing is that I make the distinction of, well, a distinction to be made by the reader, but I guess I'll go there anyway, because it's something that somebody's going to point out is hypocritical, but it's really not. But the funny thing is that I mentioned where there really never in American history has there been such loyalty on a messianic level as demonstrated as that we see in the loyalty to Trump. And very earlier in the book, I talk about Springsteen's cult following and his messianic fans. Early in his career, he had a very largely male audience who were very, very protective of him. A lot of the artists at the No Nukes concert, you know,
right.
A lot of the artists weren't even tolerated by Springsteen's very hostile male audience in 1979. A lot of these people are largely the same ones who jumped ship when he started getting political. And that's a very important thing to state right now, is that Springsteen wasn't political until a certain period. I guess I'll get into that a little bit up ahead. But, you know, again, the book focuses on the last month of 1980 for the most part. Everything that happens in the book happened exactly 40 years ago, right now as we speak. Right now, we're in mid-November.
Right? Yeah.
And a lot of the core of what I write about happened during that period. I'm pretty much telling three stories simultaneously, right? It starts, it kind of starts with a brief recap of how John Lennon had steered away from the Beatles into this life of activism and social justice causes. So right off the bat,
completely isolated himself from the Beatles at that point. I mean, they were, you know, he would record with some of those guys, but as far as what the Beatles represented and what John Lennon represented, that it couldn't be more opposite.
Imagine if that same 29-year-old John Lennon were around today. He'd be out there with everybody else, and the right would be treating him the same way they treat Alyssa Milano.
Yep.
You know, they would be like, how dare he open his mouth, shut up and sing, blah, blah, blah. You know, although there was one reporter, what the hell is her name, man? She was a New York Times reporter, and she gave him crap. Like, she called him out, and she was like, really put his beliefs to the test and gave him hell. Gloria Emerson, that was the one. The footage out there is a real famous where she's like really, really like busting his balls. And you don't really think you're going to end the war, do you? You wake up, you naive little boy. But if you think about what happens to John Lennon once we enter the 70s, he's already a target for the conservative right wing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they hated him already.
Once
he made that statement about the Beatles being bigger than Jesus,
That put him right on the map. Yeah, he was right on their radar.
But like now, you got John living in Greenwich Village. You know, you got people like Abby Hoffman and Jerry Rubin knocking on his door and crashing in his apartment. You know, he does this benefit for the prisoners up at Attica. He's doing things like, you know, he's demonstrating with Native Americans in Syracuse, and he's got like he does a benefit for John Sinclair, who is like doing 10 years for two joints. Now, the Nixon administration takes out an FBI file on John, and we know the rest. You know, that's not the story I'm telling, but that's the backstory, and they do whatever they can to try and deport him, you know, because they see him, they don't see him as a threat to America, but they see him as a threat to the Republican Party, because Nixon was terrified that John and Yoko had so much fucking power that they were going to mobilize enough young voters to vote Democrat in the 72 election.
Sounds like a few people out these days too, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Fucking mirror image.
Not that anybody would needed John and Yoko to talk them into voting against Nixon in 1972.
No.
But you know, like John, the point is like John's power and influence was disgustingly exaggerated and overestimated. You know, even as a Beatle, John Lennon was never that powerful. You know, he never had that much influence over an entire population of kids. I guess the underlying factor through all of this, through at least the part of the late 60s and early 70s, is Reagan. And Ronald Reagan has absolutely nothing to do with Lennon by association. You know, they met only one time.
Right.
But the second story I'm telling is where Reagan was in his life and career during that period. And so we have this guy that's twice Lennon's age, very much a liberal, a Democrat. His father was, you know, Jack Reagan was staunchly against racism. He refused, you know, they were dying to see Birth of the Nation when it came out. He refused to take his kids to see Birth of a Nation because there was a lot of racial implications in it. Ronald Reagan was just raised with very liberal values, you know, a very religious upbringing, Roman Catholic father, you know, Protestant Christian mother, although Nell Reagan had a much more positive influence on him than Jack did. You know, and that goes a long way in the connections I make later to Lennon and Springsteen, believe it or not. Because you know that Jack Reagan was an alcoholic. Douglas Springsteen was suffering severe depression, didn't even know it. It was undiagnosed at the time, but it kind of really took a toll on that whole relationship with him and Bruce. Freddie Lennon, or Alfred Lennon, whichever one we go by, you know, he left John at a very early age. John grew up without his dad. Yeah. So there's obviously a lot of resentment there. All three men are fucked up from their fathers. All three of these guys are fucked up because of their fathers and very, very permanently marked by their fathers. All three share the same similarity in that they all had that very strong female figure in their lives, man. John's Aunt Mimi, Adele Springsteen, Nell Reagan, you know, although, you know, Bruce spends until his like mid to late 30s kind of bouncing off different women, a couple actresses here and there. But Lennon and Reagan are both very codependent figures who pretty much let their wives run the show. Nancy is very influential in decisions that her husband makes, and so is Yoko. And both women are like, both of them are second wives. Both women are wrapped up in astrology. They let tarot cards literally dictate like White House policy and whether or not John Lennon was going to be allowed to go outside the Dakota on any particular day. I mean, literally. I mean, Yoko was literally dictating that it's not in the stars, John. You know, you got to stay in for two more days, you know, shit like that. And both saw their wives in this very maternal light, just to the point where it was creepy. I mean, Reagan literally calling Nancy Reagan mommy, and John Lennon referred to Yoko as mother. Very creepy, but very telling similarities between these guys. Reagan's diaries were also very telling in that relationship, man. I really used a lot of primary sources from the Reagans themselves. So a lot of their own personal words came in very handy. But, you know, by 1980, Reagan had obviously gone through his political transformation, where by way of Nancy's stepfather and Ronald Reagan's father-in-law, Loyal Davis, kind of has a lot of conversations. And, you know, I mean, there's not one person that's responsible for Ronald Reagan's transformation of politics, but it's still one of the kind of it's an enigma, like Reagan himself. We really can't fully get a grasp on how he went from being a liberal Democrat who voted four times for FDR to the conservative Republican that he later became in the 60s. It's still, I don't know if I have much more understanding going out of this book as I did going into it. Obviously, by 1980, Lennon is coming off of this five-year break. He hasn't done any albums. He hasn't done any interviews. He's raised his son, Sean. He got back together with Yoko in 1975 after like an 18-month breakup. And they had a baby. They had Sean. And, you know, John just wanted to sit home and be a house husband.
Yeah.
And, you know, so after 5 years, he lost touch with music. He lost touch with everything. And Springsteen is this young, up-and-coming rock star who's never really uttered a political word in his life. But he's already critically respected and praised, and he really wants a hit song. He wants a hit album. He wants the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
He's going from, he's about to release this album, The River. Lennon is about to release Double Fantasy. They both have these new albums coming out. Both are pivotal albums that they're going to be turning points in their careers because, you know, The River is being the one that's going to bring Bruce from cult status to worldwide superstar. Double Fantasy is where John's trying to reconcile his, you know, all that activism in the radical past with now being an adult who's just turning 40 And he's still kind of struggling to figure out where that past is going to kind of fit the present. He had a very positive outlook on the upcoming 80s, you know, and he was looking forward to it. And his whole perspective was that the children of the 60s had pretty much kind of withered the 70s and survived it. All that energy that it had kind of transformed through the eyes of those people who were now adults was still energy. It was still energy, and that energy was going to welcome in the rest of the 80s for John. And that was where he was. And that was what Bob Grumman said to us when we interviewed him for the podcast a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the last conversation that Bob Grumman had with John, and that was on Friday, December 5th in the studio. And, you know, John was looking at touring. And his life is cut short. Obviously, we know what happens. It's like the Titanic. You know the boat's going to sink. Well, you know that John Lennon is going to get murdered halfway through this book.
Yeah.
And there's no way to avoid that. The backdrop of all this is the 1980 election. So at some point, the book settles into the autumn of 1980. And Reagan gets elected, and Springsteen is suddenly transformed into this outspoken guy, and he goes out in front of his audience and he tells his audience how scary he thinks it is. And it kind of, even Grell Marcus, I think it was a Rolling Stone, or he kind of predicted where he had a feeling that this was kind of, it was going to inform Springsteen's writing for the future. And it kind of informed his writing for the rest of his career, you know, because after Reagan's elected, Bruce starts examining and really excavating the American past, just to get kind of a clearer understanding of the country that he's living in, what his role is, you know, why he was so bothered by the election of Reagan. He starts kind of simultaneously reading this book on Woody Guthrie and just this whole landscape of Depression era America and just the Dust Bowl era America. And he, in the middle of a concert at Nassau Coliseum, he brings out "This Land Is Your Land." He introduces it as this answer to Irving Berlin, who had just wrote "God Bless America." And it wasn't just Woody Guthrie was known as a protest singer.
Yeah.
You know, he carried that sticker on his guitar that said, "This machine kills fascists." And Bruce goes to Europe soon after. You know, this is after Lennon is murdered. You know, he goes to Europe to tour, his first massive tour of Europe, and he starts reading a couple of books, one of which was The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. And it just really opens him up, you know. And, you know, soon after, obviously, he meets Ron Kovic. And at the, by the end of the River tour, he's doing a Vietnam benefit for the Vietnam vets,
yeah.
Which kind of becomes the seeds for Born in the USA. So what's happening in this book is three things. Lennon, obviously, the rock and roll's past. You know, you got rock and roll's future and the future of America with the entire world at stake, because that's where I kind of get back into politics and what were the consequences of the Reagan years. But, you know, a lot of it is argued that, it really wraps up in the present. There are definitely connections to be made between the three people I talk about. How he arrived at the decision to play that night rather than cancel his own show and things like that.
Did he play that night?
Bruce did play. Bruce played on the night that John was killed. Obviously, they didn't find out until they got off stage. And they played the next night. They played on December 9th, and he was in Philadelphia. They played at the Spectrum.
Also, he was back in the States then at that point.
Well, he hadn't left the States. He goes to Europe in spring of 81. So this is well after Lennon is killed.
Yeah,
but, so Bruce is basically home for the holidays, you know. So he comes back home for the Garden shows for Thanksgiving. And he stays in the tri-state area through all of December. And he's basically in Connecticut. And, he goes up to Boston. And he's playing in Philly, and he plays four shows at the Garden, and then he goes and he plays three shows at the Nassau Coliseum out on Long Island. So yeah, he was here. He was in Philly for Philly is here.
Yeah.
Obviously, with the big mindfuck of this all is the murder. Another big thing that people forget that I kind of bring out in this book is that there's this narrative over the years that John Lennon, you know, he's walking through the driveway and He's shot in the back, goes up 6 stairs and falls down. Well, there's one very important thing, and that's that John Lennon was never shot in the back.
Right.
John Lennon was shot in the chest. You know, John Lennon was facing his shooter, and that's one of the things that strangely history has forgotten about.
Yes, for
well, you know, as far as in terms of like people that, you know, I mean, the nurses confirmed that, you know, and I've spoke to several of the nurses that
he asked for an autograph, didn't he?
Chapman?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, John signed Chapman's album, the guy who shot him, about 5 o'clock that afternoon. And John returned.
Okay, so I had that mistaken, and I thought he asked him at the scene, like that's what he was doing.
No. So basically,
he signed earlier that day.
So the book. I mean, the climax of the book. Unfortunately, the climax of the book happens in the middle of the book. You know, because everything kind of leads up to Lennon's murder, and the book is kind of, even though the book is written in three, and I'll wrap up after this because we're kind of pushing an hour. Even though the book is told in three parts, the book is kind of two halves, if that makes sense. There's before the murder and there's after the murder.
Yeah, sure.
Reagan gets shot 3 months after Lennon. So you know, there's another shooting that happens. So it's not without its violence.
Yeah.
You know? So
violence kills, Mike.
So there's two big shootings that happen. You know, and it's very adventure packed book, Pat. No, but a lot of the things that that happen, or it's just very, very detailed of what happened during that day. I don't know of any more comprehensive telling or retelling of December 8th that I know of. An entire book was written on that day, but not really as far as the murder itself. And the accounts that I've gotten, you know, in the people I've talked to, I kind of put you on the ground, you know, as if you're there. And that's what I tried to do. I tried to put the reader on the ground outside the Dakota. Wow. As much as any recount of that event has ever done. And, I mean, I've read a lot of them, and a lot of them just go through it, and a lot of it is wrong, and a lot of the time frames are wrong. And I really, really grilled the nurses on the time frame, man, when I talk to them, just because I think history gets watered down over time and things change. Details that, for no better reason, is just to try to tell a more detailed version of the story.
You cleared it up a little bit.
And try to put every detail that we've ever heard in a linear sense, where every detail that we know is taken into account. I don't go near the conspiracy theories that, you know, Reagan coming into office, was afraid that Lennon was going to come and start being outspoken again and all this and that, that Reagan had him assassinated and all that. You know, there's no evidence of that. There's all the conspiracy theories. I addressed that in about a paragraph.
Bruce Springsteen is an icon. John Lennon is certainly an icon. Ronald Reagan's an icon. You got three icons.
Bruce Springsteen has largely taken on the role, along with all the vitriol that was once reserved for John Lennon, and Bruce Springsteen has become that lone figure, and he represents he's the last gasp of the baby boomers in terms of their rock and roll platform.
Do you think that that's why a guy like, his name is slipping me right now, but the guy from Rage Against the Machine, Tom Morello, do you think that's why he gravitates to Bruce so much?
Yes. Because Tom Morello is an intellectual. He's a humanist. He's a humanist, man.
Yes.
And he's an activist. And that's why like-minded people attract like-minded people. You know, if you're not turned on to them, you eventually find them. It's no coincidence that Neil Young was a fan of Pearl Jam and reached out to them. And Eddie Vedder eventually found his way to Bruce, you know, and Michael Stipe of REM eventually found his way to Patti Smith, and they were two worlds that kind of collided. There are kindred spirits that exist in the arts. I have no doubt that
Kid Rock.
I had. There you go. There, I had no. I have no doubt that had Kurt Cobain been alive, or not Kurt Cobain. Well, yeah. If Lennon had been alive, man, I think he would have loved Nirvana.
Really?
I think Lennon.
We did have this discussion.
I think Lennon would have been involved in, you know, remember Occupy Wall Street in 2011. I think Lennon would have been down there with kids.
Absolutely.
I think Lennon would be very vocal right now. And I think there would be a lot of people on the right that probably would have long turned on Lennon by now, saying Lennon should shut the, you know.
And not only now, he would have been voicing every single, through every, from 1989 forward, all the war and stuff going on in the Middle East. He would have been heavily involved with it.
Fighting the fight. Yeah, I mean, the book, again, is called Autumn and Everything After. It's the murder of John Lennon, evolution of Bruce Springsteen, and the birth of the Reagan era. It's available in print copies, soft cover, through Ingram Spark. It's also available as an ebook, Amazon KDP. And there are independent booksellers who do carry the book. So if you're, you know, if you have a thing about Amazon, a lot of people prefer not to shop at Amazon. I totally understand that. There are indie sellers out there. Offhand, I can't tell you who they are because I'm still trying to figure out who the hell is selling this thing.
As we meet tonight, it has never been more clear that the state of our union depends on the state of the world. And tonight, as throughout our own generation, freedom and peace in the world depend on the state of our union.
We do not have inflation because, as President Carter says, we have lived too well. We have inflation in great measure because the federal government has lived too well.
Reagan is our projected winner. Ronald Wilson Reagan of California, a sports announcer, a film actor, a governor of California, is our projected winner. We have projected Ronald Reagan the winner.
I don't know what you guys think about what happened last night, but I think it's pretty frightening. You guys are young. There's going to be a lot of people depending on you coming up.
An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous perhaps of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
John Lennon can't be dead.
Four cops pulled John Lennon out and put him into the back of a police car, and his mouth, he was bleeding from his mouth, and it was a terrible sight.
He was shot late this evening in front of his apartment building in New York City. Apparently, he was killed almost immediately. The man who shot John Lennon walked up to the musician as he was leaving his limousine. According to eyewitnesses, he said, "Mr. Lennon," and then fired at him point blank at least five times.
John Lennon was murdered on his way home, just outside the celebrated Manhattan apartment house, the Dakota, where he lived with his wife, Yoko Ono, and a five-year-old son. John Lennon's body was immediately rushed in a police car here to Roosevelt Hospital, just 13 blocks away from his apartment in Upper Manhattan. He was dead on arrival.
President of the hospital is out.
Can't say yet.
Not yet, Sam. Not yet.
Is that what he said, Frank? I couldn't hear it.
Not yet.
Not yet. Not yet. They've cheated him. They've cheated him right down to the end.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
America's future rests in 1,000 dreams inside your hearts. It rests in the message of hope in songs of a man so many young Americans admire, New Jersey's own Bruce Springsteen.
Every city, there's people going hungry. There's old folks whose Social Security checks don't get them through the month. There's people who've been hit by unemployment. There's people who the trickle-down theory of economics ain't trickling down to.
The 1980s have been born in turmoil, strife, and change. This is a time of challenge to our interests and our values.